we started a Hakdama Shir, I guess, 3 years ago, and every once in a long while we would do the Hakdama of a different Sefer, and the idea behind the Shir was to do a Hakdama of interesting and important Sfarim. So we've done a few important ones, a lot of interesting ones. I want to go back to the most important one, the one that we haven't done yet. There's no way we could do it in one shot. It's too big and it's too important to be able to really cover it in one sitting, and that's the Hakdama to the Rambam's Hakdama to the Pirush Mishnayos. At least they call it the Rambam's Hakdama to the Pirush Mishnayos. It's really the Rambam's Hakdama to Torah Shebal Peh, where the Rambam describes the development of Torah Shebal Peh. Now, this type of Hakdama, it was the first of its kind, where he really describes how the Torah was given from Moshe to Yeshua to the Zakenim, and then how Machlokas developed, and the Tanaim and Amoraim. It was the first of its kind of Hakdama or of Kuntros on this topic. Others have expanded on it and written in more detail. If you are interested in this, we went a little backwards. We already did the Kidmasa Emek, the Netziv's Hakdamas to the Shiltos, where he deals with a lot of these same issues about Nevuah, what Nevuah is all about, a lot of these, what Halach Moshe Mishina is all about. So that really should be done after the Rambam's Hakdama to the Pirush Mishnayos, because this is the Yesod HaYesodos. This is where it all begins. And also, the third one in the, if you want to have the full picture of the people who wrote most authoritatively on this topic, you have the Rambam in the Rishonim, you have the Netziv in the Achronim, you also have the Prima Gadim in the Achronim. The Prima Gadim is a Psicha Kalalas, which God willing, Bezos Hashem, hopefully one day we'll have an opportunity to learn together that also, where he also discusses this kind of thing. And then, if you're really interested in these kinds of topics, you can read the Sfarim of the Maritz Chayis. The Maritz Chayis has a lot to say, full Sfarim, Taras HaNevi'im, other Sfarim on these topics. These are the kinds of topics that really, at least the Rambam's Hakdama to the Pirush Mishnayos, probably every Jew should, every learning Jew, first of all, every Jew should be learning, so every Jew should see at some point in his life, should read through exactly how the Torah Shebal Peh was transmitted over the course of many generations. So it's a critical Hakdama. We're not going to read the entire thing inside, because that would take a lot more than the two or three sittings that we plan on doing this in, but at least you may be able to follow along. I'll try to refer from time to time where we're up to in the packets of the actual Hakdama as I'm going through telling you outside what it actually says. The Rambam starts the very first paragraph. He starts by describing how Moshe Rabbeinu, who had received the Torah from the Ribbono Shel Olam, then gave it to Klal Yisrael. And it's completely based on the Gemara in Erev and Daf Nun Dalet and Beis we just did in the Daf Yomi this past week, where the Gemara tells us, Ketzad Seder Mishnah, how was Torah taught? Moshe Laman Mipia Gavura, Moshe Rabbeinu learned from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Nichnas Aaron Veshanala Moshe Pirko. So Aaron came in and Moshe said over the Shir to Aaron, he taught it to Aaron, Nistalik Aaron Vyashal the small Moshe. So once Moshe taught it to Aaron, Aaron got up and he sat to Moshe's left. Nichnas Ubana Veshanala and Moshe Pirko. And then Aaron's children came in, Elazar Vyisamar came in, and Moshe taught it to them, Nistalik Ubana Velazar Yashav Limin, Moshe Vyisamar the small Aaron. Then after Moshe finished teaching them, Elazar sat on Moshe's right side, and Yisamar sat on the left side of Aaron. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Liolam Aaron Liyamin Moshe Choser. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Aaron went back to the right side of Moshe, because you don't want Aaron sitting on the left side when one of his children is on the right side. Okay, Nichnas Zakenim Veshanala and Moshe Pirkan. Then the Zakenim came in, and Moshe again taught the Torah. Nistalku Zakenim, Nichnasu Kalam, Veshanala Moshe Pirkan. Then the Zakenim stepped aside, and the entire Klal Yisrael came in, and Moshe Rabbeinu said the Shir again. So it turned out that Moshe Rabbeinu said the Shir four times, right? Nimsa biyad Aaron arba'a, biyad banav, Aaron heard it four times from Moshe, biyad banav shlosha, Elazar v'Yisamar heard it three times from Moshe, biyad zakenim shnayim, the zakenim heard it twice from Moshe, ubiyad kalam echad, everyone else heard it once from Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu then left, and Aaron would say it over. Then Aaron would leave, and Elazar v'Yisamar would say it over. Then Elazar v'Yisamar would leave, and the Zakenim would say it over. So it turned out that everybody heard it four times. Everybody got to hear the Shir four times. So the Gemara questions, well, once everybody's going to hear it four times, why not have Moshe Rabbeinu just say it four times himself to everybody? Why do you have to have Aaron and Elazar v'Yisamar and then the Zakenim? Why not just have him say it four times? So the Gemara says it's important to give kavod to the people who are on a higher level than everybody else, but on a lower level than Moshe Rabbeinu. They shouldn't feel like they're just like like everybody else. It's important to give them kavod, not just for them, probably for the sake of the recipients of the Torah as well. That a person, if he's going to receive the Torah, has to have kavod for those who are going to be transmitting the Torah. And it can't be that a person is only going to view Moshe Rabbeinu as the only authority figure, and then everybody else is a nobody. That's not going to be good for kavod Torah. It's not going to be good for the learning of Torah itself. So the Gemara says, why is it that that Aaron didn't just learn it from Moshe and then teach it to his children, have the children teach it and just pass it along that way? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to teach it to everybody at least once? Right, everybody heard from Moshe once. So the Gemara says, "Kim de Moshe piya gvura gamar mistayem milsei." That since Moshe heard it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it's important to hear from the one who heard it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So everyone got to hear it once from Moshe, but Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to be your day-to-day Rebbe on the nitty-gritty. You're going to have someone who's a little closer to your level to be the one to actually teach you the Torah. Now, Rambam doesn't deal with this issue, but the obvious question is, when you learn that Gemara, is that the first mission Pirkei Avos tells us, Moshe kibol Torah b'Sinai, u'masar li Yoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah from Har Sinai, and he gave it to Yoshua. Where's Yoshua in the mix over here? Moshe's giving it to Aaron, Aaron allows to be summer, allows to be summer to the Zekanim. What happened to Yoshua? It was Yoshua the Zekanim, no? So how is Yoshua cut out over here? So Rashi in Pirkei Avos says that there's a difference between Liman HaTorah and Mesiras HaTorah. That when it comes to Yoshua, that was Mesiras HaTorah. What we're describing is Liman HaTorah. The only thing is, Rashi doesn't explain what is the difference between Mesiras HaTorah and Liman HaTorah. I mean, after all, what this Gemara Devarim is describing is definitely a Mesorah, and what Yoshua did was also Limud. So how can you say Yoshua is just Mesiras HaTorah and this is Liman HaTorah? What does that mean exactly? So I thought maybe that as an instruction to Pirkei Avos, Pirkei Avos is about midos, so it's going to emphasize the midos of the Torah, the shimush tamidei chachamim, what you get from shimush tamidei chachamim, which Yoshua certainly had great experience doing, being mishamish Moshe Rabbeinu. So that Moshe gave to Yoshua, but the actual intellectual study of Torah wasn't transmitted dafka to Yoshua. That went to the to Aaron and then Elazar b'Samer, etc. But someone pointed out to me, a guy in my Daf Yomi Shir, actually, when I raised this question, his name is Dovi Kupfer, pointed out to me that there's probably something else, that, and he's probably right, that when it comes to Yoshua, Yoshua was later on. At the time that Moshe Rabbeinu first received the Torah, Yoshua wasn't ready to assume a mantle of leadership. He wasn't going to cut Aaron or Cohen in line, or even Elazar v'Samar. He was a much younger guy at that time. It was only later that Moshe Rabbeinu was Masar li Yoshua, when Moshe Rabbeinu was about to die, and they were about to go into So that's where Moshe Rabbeinu, that's the Mesiras HaTorah. Mesiras HaTorah means the next generation. That's what Rashi means by Mesiras HaTorah. Liman HaTorah means, when Moshe got it from Har Sinai, how did he see to it that now all of Klal Yisrael will get it? Moshe has all this knowledge now. How is he going to transmit that to all of Klal Yisrael? That's what this Gemara is. That's what this first paragraph of the Rambam is about. Transmitting it at stage one to all of Klal Yisrael. That's Liman HaTorah. Mesiras HaTorah is how do we ensure it for next generations. And the Rambam comes back to that. The Rambam is going to get to Yoshua. Yoshua definitely plays a critical role when it comes to transmitting to the next generation. So the Rambam then goes on to say in the second paragraph that what did they do with this Torah now that everyone had this Torah? So people would then go teach each other the Psukim, write down the Psukim, and the Rambam seems to be assuming, there's a Gemara in Gittin, Daf Samach, where the Gemara has a discussion whether the Torah was Megillah Nitna, or the Torah's Chasuma Nitna, was the Torah given piece by piece, or the Torah given just in one big chunk of Torah in its entirety. So the Rambam seems to be assuming that it was Megillah Nitna, that it was given little by little. And therefore, he says everyone would write down their couple of psukim that they learned, and that they learned from Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning every time Moshe Rabbeinu would have another few psukim, he'd come and he'd teach it with this whole process. Everyone would go home, would write them down, and then they would teach Baal Peh, they would teach all the details of these psukim, what they really mean. What does it mean, all the details? All the Torah Shebaal Peh, that's associated with the psukim. In Torah Shebaal Peh, you don't have all that much written in the Chumash. Now, there is a discussion in the Gemara in Gittin written, is Torah Ruba B'Chsav or is it Ruba Balpeh? It's a question how to read a Pasuk, whether a Pasuk is read rhetorically or literally, but whether it's Ruba B'Chsav, Ruba Balpeh. But that is most likely a machlokas about, and Prima Gadim talked about this extensively, that is most likely a machlokas about how we define Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh. But let's assume for the sake of our conversation that Torah Shebalpeh is defined as anything that's not actually written directly in Chumash, right? So people would write down the Torah Shebichsav, what's written in Chumash, and they would orally transmit to each other all the rules of Torah Shebalpeh. Yesterday's Parashah, Parashat Bahar. First Rashi on Parashat Bahar. What does Rashi ask? Ma'inyan Shemitah Itzal Har Sinai. Rashi quotes from the Torah's Kohanim. Why does it say that something happened by Har Sinai, and then right away it starts to talk about the halachos of Shemitah? Right, that's the pasuk. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe leimer gaber el das bnei Yisrael. I'm sorry, wrong parasha. Didn't sound right. At the beginning of Parshas Bahar, what did it say? Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Bahar Sinai leimer. Right away it goes right into Shemitah. Says Rashi, Mayin Shemitah Yitzal Har Sinai. Why when we just mentioned that Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai, we talk about Shemitah as opposed to anything else? So the Rashi gives a very cryptic answer.
That
just like the klalim and the pratim of Shemitah are said at Har Sinai, so to everything the klalim and the pratim were said at Har Sinai. There is an obvious kasha on that medrash that Rashi quotes. My wife had to speak at a women's shalosh shudas this past week. So she said, help me out with the Dvar Torah. So I gave her my file of Bahar B'chos, here, knock yourself out. So she read through all my drushes for the last 7-8 years. And she said, do you realize every single year you started with the same question? It's impressive that you came up with different answers every year, but every single year was the same question. The kasha is, on that, I had no idea that I asked the same question every year. And I mentioned it to some people in the show. They're like, yeah, you tell the same story about it also every year. So I have such a bad memory. But the obvious question on that Rashi is, okay, good. So Shemitah was said Kol Hasera Protesera at Har Sinai, and that teaches us everything else also. But you could have picked any mitzvah to teach us. We just picked one mitzvah. That was the Kol Hasera Protesera Shemitah was said at Har Sinai. So to every other mitzvah, the Kol Hasera Protesera was said. Any mitzvah you could have chosen as the example and made the same limud. Okay, that's a kasha for a different time. But the point the Rambam tries to bring out from that medrash is, what does that mean, kloloseo upratoseo? What are the difference between the klalim and the pratim? So says the Rambam, the klalim is the Torah Shebichsav. It's what it says in the psukim. The pratim, all of the Torah Shebalpeh on those psukim. See, he says, for example, we have a mitzvah of sukkah, but sukkah's teshu shivas yam. You're supposed to sit in sukkah for 7 days. That's the kloloseo. The klal is sit in sukkah. Are men chayiv and not women? The cholim pater, holchei drachim being pater. What makes kosher schach? That has to be gedulei karka and not mekabel tuma. How much do you have to eat and drink and to be chayiv in sukkah? What about sleeping? What's the minimum height of a sukkah? All of these are pratim that are derived in the Torah Shebalpeh that aren't in the Torah Shebichsav. So that part was transmitted orally after everyone got the verbal part. Then, says the Rambam, came the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, and this is where Yoshua comes in. At the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, of the last year of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, Moshe gathered all the people together and he said, whoever forgot anything that I've taught, doesn't know anything, isn't clear on something that I taught, let me know now and I'll explain it to you. And Hoil Moshe Ba'eres HaTorah Azos Leimar, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to clarify all areas of Torah until the 7th day of Chodesh Adar, which is Zayin Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu's yahrzeit, the day Moshe Rabbeinu died, at which point he wrote down 13 Sifrei Torah, to be Kasha in the Achronim. How could he have written down 13 Sifrei Torah on the day that he died? It was Shabbos the day that he died, according to tradition. Rashi and Erevin assumes that way, that it was Shabbos the day that he died. Okay, Akasha. But he wrote 13 Sifrei Torah, one for each Shevet, plus the Levium get one. And these were the Sifrei Torah Moshe Rabbeinu gave over on the day that he died. Now, when Yoshua and the Zakenim would learn after Moshe Rabbeinu's death, so there are new issues that come up every day in Torah. There's no way Moshe Rabbeinu could have taught them if you're allowed to send the fax from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz when it's Eis Shabbos already in Eretz Yisrael, Shabbos and Chutz Laaretz. how are they going to, there are new halachas all the time that you have to figure out. So how did they figure out the halachas? So this is where they got the Yud Gimel Midah, Shatar and Judgment. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just give them the Torah, he didn't just give them the Torah Shebal Peh, he gave them a system by which to derive halachas with Torah Shebal Peh, the Midah, Shatar and Judgment. Now we constantly refer to the Yud Gimel Midos, Shatar and Judgment. The truth is that there are probably a lot more than Yud Gimel Midah, Shatar and Judgment. We find throughout Shas more that are used that are not mentioned in the list, but however many there are, the Midah, Shatar and Judgment that were used, Yoshua and the Zekanim would sit and would learn and would figure out based on the Midah, Shatar and Judgment what the halacha would be. If what happened if they disagreed, how to utilize the Midah, Shatar and Judgment, how to make a binyanav, a hekish, they disagree, kal v'chomer, they would disagree about something, so they would go with the rov, acharav nahatos, end of story, no discussion. There was no machlokas, nothing to have this person saying this way, this person saying that way, because they went with the rov, and that was it, that was the end of the story. Good, that is the basic idea of how Torah Shebaksav, Torah Shebal Peh was given over. Then the Rambam transitions into a discussion of Nevuah and the role of Nevuah in the transmission of Torah, or put more precisely, the lack of a role of Nevuah in the transmission of Torah. The Rambam writes, Nevuah does not help in learning Torah a ki hu zeh. When it comes to learning Torah, Nevuah plays no role. Yoshua and Pinchas were Nevi'im. They learned the same exact way Ravina and Ravashi, who were not Nevi'im, learned. The uniqueness of the purpose of Nevuah can only be explained, says the Rambam, if we understand how we know what a Navi is, what Navi Emes is, what a Navi Sheker is, and then we can understand the role of Nevuah in our history as not being related to Limud HaTorah and what it actually does relate to. He says a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that that in order to be proven as a Navi, a person needs to be Meshana Miminhagu Shal Olam, like Eliyahu Bachyosa Ben Ish Almana. A person has to change nature, has to do something supernatural. Like Eliyahu, a Navi comes and does Tchias HaMesim. Ooh, that's what made Eliyahu Navi, the great Navi, that he did Tchias HaMesim. That's how we know he's a Navi Emes. Says the Rambam, that is false, and it is a terrible, terrible mistake to make, to think that someone who does a Moface, that's what determines, and that's what that certifies him as a Navi. That is a terrible mistake for a person to make. The Rambam says, if you want to understand Nevuah, I need to explain to you that there are two types of Nevuah, and within each type of Nevuah, there are two subcategories. So that means there are a total of four categories. Of the four categories, three of them are what we would call a Navi Sheker. And the fourth one is what we would call a Navi Emes. So let's go through. One basic category of Nevuah is someone who's misnavi b'shem avodah zarah. No matter what mofsim a person does, if a person is misnavi b'shem avodah zarah, he's chayiv chenek. Now, what does it mean to be misnavi b'shem avodah zarah? It can mean two things. It could mean the person comes and says, an avodah zarah came to me to say that I should worship avodah zarah and that we should all worship avodah zarah. And that's, you know, for example, the Nevi'ei Habal, Nevi'ei HaAsherah. And as a man comes and says that I got a Nevuah, I received a prophecy from the Avodah Zarah, and this Avodah Zarah told me in a vision that we're supposed to worship the Avodah Zarah. That is a Navi Sheker, it's Chayiv Chenek. Another type of Navi for Avodah Zarah is a Navi comes and says, the Avodah Zarah didn't talk to me, Hashem spoke to me. Hashem came to me, and he told me that we have to worship Avodah Zarah. Hashem said that we're supposed to go for today, just today. Tomorrow we'll go back to regular Orthodox Judaism. But even if you just for today, to go and worship Asherah, worship the Baal, that's what Hashem told me, b'nevuah. The guy could be the most credible source possible. He could have written dozens of svarim that are widely respected. He could be the greatest tzaddik and Talmud Chacham and Anav and everything else. If he comes and he tells us that, he's chayiv chenek. Absolutely chayiv misa. We don't listen, we shut him out. Then the that's one category of Nevuah, one general category is a Navi B'Shem Avodah Zarah. Second category is a Navi B'Shem Hashem, someone who's a Navi B'Shem Hashem. Now, this has two subcategories. One subcategory of a Navi that's a Misnavi B'Shem Hashem, yeah, please, is a Misnavi B'Shem Hashem, is a guy comes in and says, Hashem came to me and told me to add a pasuk. To add something to a pasuk, not add a pasuk, add something to a pasuk. For instance, the Rambam says, one of the great things about the Rambam's Hakdamah to the Parashat Mishnayos is just looking at the examples he gives when he tries to come up with examples. like why he chooses these examples would be an interesting study in trying to figure out. He says, for instance, someone who comes and says that a tree is Arla for 2 years or for 4 years, not for the first 3 years. He says it's 2 years or 4 years. It's Mosif or Goreya from what it says. Why he chose Arla and 2 years and 4 years as opposed to 3 years? I don't know. I don't know why he chose that din, but he says that someone who comes and says that a din in Torah Shebal Peh is not true, even if he doesn't adjust. See, Arla is Torah Shebuksah, right? He's trying to adjust a pasuk. Even if he doesn't adjust a pasuk, he just tries to adjust what it says in Torah Shebal Peh. For instance, v'katzosa eskapa, he says is to be taken literally that you cut off the woman's hand, which we know the Torah Shebal Peh tells us it does not mean we cut off her hand. So such a Navi is Chayiv Chenek, even if he does Mofsim, even if he performs miracles. Why? Lo b'shamayim. Because the Torah is not b'shamayim. Interpretation of Torah is not b'shamayim. But the Nevuah is reserved for other things. It's not for interpretation of Torah. And if he says we have to interpret Torah Shebichsav or Torah Shebalpeh based on a Nevuah, he's Chayiv Chenek. Says the Rambam, what's the end of the pasuk of Shemayim? What is it? It's Beficha uvilvavcha la'asoso. What does it mean, Beficha uvilvavcha? What are those two words? Says the Rambam, Beficha is Torah Shebichsav. Bilvavcha is Torah Shebalpeh. Where is it? Why is Torah Shebalpeh bilvavcha? So the Rambam understands that it's our heart that discerns, that contemplates, that figures things out. That's Torah Shebalpeh. Beficha is just, you know, what's said. We read Torah Shebichsav. It's there, and we say it. But the more discerning, amelus, figuring out, examining, analyzing, that's belayed. We could perhaps add, the Beis Halevi writes in the Drasha, that what is the, what is it, we know where Torah Shebichsav is written. It's written with Dio al Gabe Klav, with ink on parchment. Where's Torah Shebalpeh written? It's Chakuk Aluach Libecha. Torah Shebal Peh is written on the parchment of our hearts. That's ki'ilu, the parchment of the Torah Shebal Peh. So beficha, Torah Shebichsav. Bilvavcha, that's Torah Shebal Peh. And if a Navi comes and says that there's 2 years of Arla, 4 years of Arla, that Katosas Kappa is literal, he's obviously lying. Ein Navi Rashai L'chadish Davar, he's not allowed to say Alpi Nevua, that something is true in Torah based on his Nevua, he's Chayiv Misa. So what's the good kind of Nevua, now that we've gone through three different bad kinds of Nevua? So the good kind of Nevua is also someone who's Misnavi B'Shem Hashem, but instead of saying that Hashem added to the Torah Shebuksav, the Torah Shebal Peh, he comes and he warns people either to keep the Torah, and then sometimes he's even allowed to add instructions that are against the Torah, provided that it's Hora Hashah, provided that it's only temporary. Meaning, once he's already, if his first time he shows up, some guy we never heard of before comes and says, okay everybody, this Shabbos is off, we got to be Mechal this Shabbos, we don't listen to him. Once he's a certified Navi, and we know that he's a certified Navi, and he comes and he tells us that we have to fight a war this Shabbos, and we're going to have to light fires to prepare our weapons to go out to fight battles, and to steal to take the money from the enemies, and to take their wives, and to, he could say as many averos, he could have the biggest avera list in the world of what we have to do, but it's just for this Shabbos, and he's already a certified Navi, we must listen to him. That is a Navi. That's a Nevuah from a Navi, and someone who doesn't listen to him is Chayev Misa Bidei Shemayim. If it's not true, if it turns out that that what he's saying is not true, then he's Chayev Chenek. But if we ascertain that what he's telling us is truth, that he's a true Navi, then anyone who doesn't listen to him is Chayev Misa Bidei Shemayim. So the Rambam says, okay, good. So now all I need to know is, how do I test a Navi? How do I know what makes a person a certified Navi? Right? He said, if a certified Navi comes and tells us we got to change the Torah, we got to change the pasuk, we got to change the Torah Shebal Peh, something like that. So what do we do with the Navi? We kill him. He's not a Navi, even though he was previously certified. But if a certified Navi comes and tells us this Shabbos, just this Shabbos, we need to be Mechal Shabbos, go to war or something like that, we listen to him. And if we don't listen to him, we're Chayiv Misa. So what makes a certified Navi? How do we certify a Navi? This is where people make the mistake of thinking he comes and he does a miracle and that's a certified Navi. Says the Rambam, no. First off, Eina Nevuah Shara El Al Chacham Gibor V'Ashir. Nevuah only, first of all, he has to have certain personality traits. He has to be a Chacham, a Gibor, an Ashir. He has to be someone who's independent, someone who's a Balmidos, someone who's intellectually very capable. only when he's those are the bare minimum. Even when you achieve that, there's still no guarantee. We saw the Rambam Nachdam Tver Chelek discusses this a little bit. Even when you achieve that, there's still no guarantee that you're going to be a Navi. But those are the basic criteria to being a Navi. Malos Hasichlios, I think he calls it, and Malos Hamidos. You have to have character, great character, and also great intellect in order to even start to be in the parsha of talking about whether you're going to be a Navi. And then he has to prove it by predicting something. He has to tell us what's going to be. The thing is, his prediction can't be basically true. His prediction must be completely true. If there's a single detail that's off in his prediction, we reject it completely. If he goes and he predicts the entire March Madness bracket, and he tells us who's going to win every single game and by what score, and someone he predicted a team to win by 4 points, and they were up by one, and the guy heaved the ball in the last second, and it went in the basket from half court, and he got another, and it seemed like it was 3 points, but then the refs called it off, and they said, no, it was right after the buzzer, so they really only won by one. We kill that guy. He's not a Navi. He's a Navi Sheker, right? He's not a Navi because he got it wrong. He got everything else right. Oh my gosh, that's impossible by nature. It's a natural way. It's no way that anyone can get this right. Every score, it's impossible. He was off in one little detail. He was off in what color tie the coach is going to be wearing that day. He's a Navi Sheker. We reject everything. And that has to happen repetitively over time. One good guess, he doesn't get certified as a Navi Emes. He has to constantly, over time, build a reputation of being able to predict things and it coming true. V'yeda kol Yisrael midon v'ad ber sheva ki neman Shmuel the Navi Hashem. When we describe the beginnings of Shmuel's career as a Navi, how does it describe? How the Navi describes how he, from Don v'ad ber sheva, he slowly built up a reputation of getting things right, and they would ask him about the most mundane things. When Shaul needed, what was Shaul's first question for Shmuel? When he I need a Navi. What was he doing? He was looking for an animal, a lost animal. I lost an animal. I don't know, it's $100. You go to the Navi. That's what Shmuel needed to be doing. Yeah, that's how you build up a reputation, by being able to show these things, predict these things. He would be able to see the future. Ki the Navi, Yikari Lefanim, the Navi tells us, Haroe. The Navi was always called the Roe. Why? Because he was able to see the future. Now, being able to predict the future doesn't make a person a Navi, because Kosmim and charlatans are able to predict the future sometimes also. But here's the difference, says the Rambam. When someone is a charlatan, he predicts the future 99%. Maybe. Sometimes 1%. But at most, 99%. He never gets it 100% right. He'll say that this year is going to be a drought. There's not going to be any rain this year. And one day, maybe in the middle of the night, it's going to drizzle a little bit. He's going to be wrong. He's going to be proven wrong. If someone claims to be a Navi, he's a Navi Sheker. If he gets, even again, that little detail wrong. Kishem she'i efshar lebar below teven, kach efshar lechalom below dvarim betelim, says Gemara Brachos. Some sort of chalom, some sort of other vision that's not nevuah, will always have dvarim betelim. Nevuah doesn't have dvarim betelim. So, however, says Rami, there's one very important caveat over here. That's if the Navi predicts good things. If the Navi predicts bad things and then they don't happen, even if it doesn't happen entirely, he's still a good Navi. He could still be a true Navi. Sometimes Hashem will tell the Navi, I'm going to do something bad, but then Nachem al Ra'ah, Hashem is Menachem al Ra'ah, he decides to have mercy on us. Sometimes he grants us an extension, and he'll delay it because of some sort of zechuyos that we have, or some sort of mitzvah that we've done. If he promises good, if the Navi comes and promises something good, and that doesn't come true, then he's a Navi Sheker. All of this is only if he promises good. If he promises bad, and it doesn't happen, it does not necessarily make him a Navi Sheker. Kol davar sheyatzim pi HaKadosh Baruch Hu letova, afilu al tanai einu chozer. Anything Hashem says that's going to happen good, even if it's al tanai, Hashem's not going to back out on that. So ask the Rambam, I have one big problem here. If this rule is correct, what do we do with Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov Avinu was afraid that the promise that Hashem had him, that he's going to protect him, and that he'll be okay, and he'll be able to go back home, was not going to apply. He was afraid Esav was going to kill him. Right? He was afraid Shema Yigro Machet, that maybe an Avera that he had done will cause Hashem to back out. Ask the Rambam,
What do you mean an aver eli adon will cause Hashem to back out? Hashem can't back out on something good. Hashem only backs out on something bad. So what do you mean, Hashem, no matter what averus you did, Hashem never backs out on something good? Remember the Akdama to Perchelek, I think it was, the Rambam describes why Yaakov lacked the Amunah. Didn't he? Wasn't it a lack of emunah to be afraid about this? And the Ram gives an explanation other than Shema Yigrom Achet. He says, no, he thought that wasn't a lack of no. He says, yeah, Yitaka did lack emunah. You don't have to be perfect in emunah to be a Navi. You have to be good. You have to be very good, but not perfect. But over here, the Ram is dealing with a different issue. How could Hashem ever back out on something good anyway? So what was Yaakov afraid of? So the Ram explains there's a difference between a personal promise and a promise for the klal. When Hashem promises Yaakov something personally, that he could back out on. But when Hashem tells Yaakov, go tell the world about this, Hashem tells a Navi, go tell the world about something good I'm going to do, that Hashem will never back out on. And the Ram says this is very clear, the idea that a nevuah for bad Hashem will back out on, but a nevuah for good he won't back out on, is very clear in the Navi Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu HaNavi was the prophet of doom. He was the prophet of destruction. He would be in the Sinavi about a Nebuchadnezzar was going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So Yirmiyahu HaNavi is a conversation with Hananiah ben Azur. Hananiah ben Azur was a prophet of good, that the Klei HaMikdash would return. So Yirmiyahu HaNavi says to him, listen, the difference between me and you is if my nevuah doesn't happen, I'm still a Navi. If your nevuah doesn't happen, you're not a Navi. Why? Because Yirmiyahu HaNavi is being misnave for bad. So if my nevuah doesn't happen, I'm still a Navi. I'm still good. It just means Hashem was had Rachmanus. If your nevuah doesn't happen, you're prophesizing for good, then it shows that you're not a Navi. Good. So that's how we test the Navi. Now, once he is tested, the Navi has authority to do what no other person in Judaism is allowed to do. And this is what makes a Navi unique. Not Lima Torah. This is what makes a Navi unique. He can tell us to temporarily be Mevatel a mitzvah, except for Avodah Zarah. Any other mitzvah, any other Isser, he can tell us to temporarily be Mevatel. Avodah Zarah is the one exception. Even a Navi can't tell us. Becholim Yomer Lecha Navi Avor Al Divrei Torah Shemalo Chutz Mi Avodah Zarah, says Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi. Anything a Navi tells you to do, you do, even in violation of the Torah, except for Avodah Zarah. For instance, Elio and Har Carmel was Mala Karban Olah B'chutz. It's a Chiv Misa to do such a thing. To bring up a Karban Olah B'chutz in Beis HaMikdash outside of the Azara, terrible Avodah. Elisha instructed cutting down fruit trees, Baltashchis, Isser Da'araisa, during the war with Moab. How is he allowed to do it? Because he's a Navi, and a Navi's allowed to tell us a Rasha to violate an Isser. Then the Rambam gives this dramatization. He says, can you imagine? A Navi comes and tells us on Shabbos, light a fire, go fight a war, take their money, take their women, and he gives us a whole list of Yisurim that this Shabbos that we have to do. You have to do it immediately, without delay, without question. You go and you listen to the Navi. What if you have one old tzaddik? He's 119 years old and 353 days. He's about to turn 100. You know, he's holding by the end. The guy never did an aver his whole life. And he says, I've never, ever been mechal Shabbos my entire life. What am I going to do in war anyway? I'm 119 years old. I can't help you anyway. I'm going to be mechal Shabbos now. I can't bring myself to do it. You know what we do to that nice little tzaddikal? We kill him. He's chayiv misa. Well, we don't kill him. He's chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, because he's not listening to the Navi. Failure to listen to the Navi, that's the Rambam's dramatization. It's pretty, right? It's pretty impressive. So, such a person is chayiv misa. If the Navi, though, were to come, and instead of telling us to light fires and fight wars and take women, the Navi comes and says, you know, Hashem told me Tchum Shabbos is 1,999 amos, not 2,000 amos. Hashem told me. He's chayiv misa. Because what did he do? He changed the din. It's a din d'rabbanan, but he changed the din al pi nevuah. If he says, look, I analyzed the sugya, and based on chachmas haTorah, I think the din d'rabbanan is really 1,999 amos, not 2,000 amos, okay, then he's not chayv misa, he's entitled to his opinion. But if he changes the din based on nevuah, he says, no, I had a nevuah, 1,999 amos, he's chayv misa in that situation. Not only that, says the Rambam, just again to emphasize that a Navi is no better than a Chacham when it comes to Torah. If 1,000 Navim say one way in Halacha, and 1,001 Chachamim say the other way, how do we paskin? Like the 1,001 Chachamim, right? Achrei Rabban Lahatos. If a Navi says to paskin one way in a machlokes, because of a Nevuah, that he had, that he got a paskin this way, that Navi is Chayiv Misa. That's the big kasha. Tishbi Yitaritz Kushios V'Bayos. Marat Chayis has the kasha already. How can we say Teku means Tishbi Yitaritz Kushios V'Bayos, or the Gemara has an expression of that, Shiyava Eliyahu, that Eliyahu Navi will come and answer our shaylas. If Eliyahu Navi comes and answers our shaylas al pinavua, he's Chayiv Misa. Right? He can't come and answer our shaylas al pinavua. But it happens to be Eliyahu Navi, in addition to being a great Navi, was also a great Talmud Chacham. So it could be that we say Tishbi Tavu, that when Eliyahu Navi comes, the Chachmas HaTorah that he's going to bring back with him is going to be the level of Torah learning is going to rise to the level where we'll be able to figure it out with Chachmas HaTorah, but not with Nevuah. Nevuah can't be used for any of this. Okay, next section, and the last section we'll do today, is about Machlokas. So the Ram says, okay, now that I've described the basic Masir, so far we've done two sections, basic Masir of Torah Shebal Peh and Nevuah. Now we get to how Machlokas crept in. Yeah?
He can say that he's not changing a din.
Yeah, but even to paskin a halacha based on the nevuah, it sounds from the Rambam is very wrong. So now we get into Machlokas. So Yeshua gives over the Torah with determined, the halacha is determined based on Rov already, meaning even when he disagreed with the others, Canaan, they took a vote and went to Rov and they had the definitive halacha. And he gave it to the next generation, who gave it to the Nevi'im, and each generation, they were mechadish chidushim based on the Yudgil Mishnatar and Drashas Ben. By the time the Anshei Knesset HaGadol came around, they added Gezeros for Takanos, and then the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGadol is Shimon HaTzadik, the earliest of the Tanayim, and who also happened to be the Kohen Gadol. Now, and every Machlokas was decided. They had, of course they had Machlokasim, but they decided it based on Rov. Whatever Rav was, and that was it. End of the story. There's no two Torahs in Klal Yisrael. Everyone's doing the same thing because they did it. They decided based on Rav. Then Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi comes along many, many generations later, and he was unique. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was a unique character who was uniquely capable of doing what he did. No one else could have done what he did. What do I mean by that? What does the Rambam mean by that? The Rambam explains. He was called Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He was independently great and well, meaning he was called Rabbeinu HaKadosh because he was clearly of a different stature than everybody else in his generation. There was no shaila of who's greater. You know, he was the Lahavdil El Falfi Avdalos. You know, is LeBron James or fill in your player better? There's no shaila. It's not really up for discussion. So he was clearly head and shoulders above everybody else. He was Toru Gedulah Makom Echad for the first time since Moshe Rabbeinu, that the greatest sage of the generation and the greatest political force of the generation was the same person for the first time since Moshe Rabbeinu. He was exceedingly humble, Mishan Sota Mishmesh Rebbe Batla Anava, from when Rebbe died, so Anivus died with Rebbe. He was a Baal Masorah himself, who could trace his transmission of Torah all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, where the Rambam says, he heard it from Shimon Aviv, who heard from Gamliel Aviv, who heard from Shimon Aviv, who heard from Gamliel Aviv, who heard from Shimon Aviv. There were a few of Shimon Gamliels, one after the other, generation after generation. Who heard from Hillel Aviv, who heard from Shmai Vavtali Aviv, who heard from Yehuda ben Tavai and Shimon ben Shetach, who heard from Yoshua ben Prachya ben Nitai Arbali, who heard from Yossi ben Yosef and Yossi ben Yochanan, who heard from Antagonus Ish-Socho, who heard from Shimon HaTzadik, from Ezra, from who himself is from the Shiari Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, from Baruch ben Neriya, from Yirmiyahu and Navi. Okay, and then as far as we go, once you hit Nevi'im, so you can imagine the rest of the line is all Nevi'im back to this game, and you go all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So he was a tremendous Baal Masorah. He knew exactly where his Torah came from. So he gathered together all the dinim that were learned out with the Yidgul Mishatan Rashban up until that point, and he even included the Machlokasim, and the Rambam will get back to that in a little bit, why he included the Machlokasim, even when it's a Machlokas Yachal and a Rabbim, and it's already been decided that we pass on like the Rabbim, because everything was decided already, he even included all of that, and he put together Mishnayis. Now, says the Rambam, if everything is Klal Asara Pratasa Misinai, so what does Halacha L'Moshe Misinai mean? Right, if all of Torah Shebal Peh was given at Sinai, so what does it mean Halacha L'Moshe Misinai? What's different about Halacha L'Moshe Misinai than all of Torah? So the Rambam writes that you have to understand there are two types of L'Moshe Misinai. There are two types of Halachos L'Moshe Misinai. There are two subcategories. So it's what the Rambam calls Perushim Hamukubalim L'Moshe Misinai, and then there's the standard Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Perushim HaMukubalim L'Moshe Misinai is like ayin tachas ayin means that you pay money and that you don't knock out the guy's eye. Pre-Eitz Hadar means an esrog, not a rimon. A Perush HaMukubal, says Ram, no one ever questioned. There was never machlokas about it. No one ever said, no, I really think, honest to goodness, I believe an esrog means a rimon. No one ever in the history of the Chacham ever thought that. even though the Gemara discusses it, the Gemara says, how do I know that it doesn't mean a Rimon? The Rambam says, the Gemara is not really saying, how do I know it doesn't mean a Rimon? We know it doesn't mean a Rimon. What the Gemara is saying is there an indication in the Pasuk that could bring a riot to this idea? But not that anyone ever questioned it. Perisha Mekubal, though, the character of... what's unique about Perisha Mekubal is it's based on something that it says in the Torah. The Torah says, pre-etzadr, so I know I have to take something. So Perisha Mekubal is, I don't know what the words mean. Halach l'moshe, Perish HaMekubal l'moshe b'sinai, that those words pre-etzadr mean esrog. That's Perish HaMekubal. No machlokas on Perish HaMekubal. Halach l'moshe b'sinai is when there are no words in the Torah to indicate this halacha. The Gemara struggles. How can you say shiurim are halach l'moshe b'sinai? There's a pasuk, eretz chito sa'ora, and every word in that pasuk comes to teach me a different shir, a shir of kedei achilas pras, and a shir of kezayus, kol shiurah kezesim, and a shir, right? All of those things teach me a different shir. So what does Gemara say? Nah, it's a smachta bi'alma. That pasuk is an asmachta bi'alma. But the all the shirim are really halach l'moshe b'sinai. Says the Rambam, you know what asmachta means? Asmachta means the Torah never meant it at all. It's just a nice way to remember it. A nice way to remember what the shirim are is when you remember that pasuk. But Hashem didn't mean that when he wrote that pasuk. The shirim all came from halach l'moshe b'sinai. It's got no connection to the pasuk. Halach l'moshe b'sinai can't have a connection to the pasuk. Of course, that line in the Rambam, the Ritva, the Sechs Rosh Hashanah, takes strong issue with. It says asmachta means that Hashem didn't mean it? No, there's so many deep levels of interpretation of psukim, and one level of interpretation is something that's so far down that it's not even a din d'oraisa, but it's Hashem giving the cue to the Rabbanan, here's where I want you to make a din d'Rabbanan. That's what a smachta means. How can you say that it's a... So the Rav Yosef Engel discusses maybe there's a difference between a smachta versus a smachta bialma. Maybe only asmachta bialma means it has no resemblance, living or dead, to what it says in Chumash. Asmachta is something that actually is Hashem hinting to us in Chumash that we're supposed to say something. Whatever it is, halach l'moshe m'sinai is something that it just simply doesn't say in the Torah anywhere. That it just doesn't mention it anywhere in the Torah, but we have this tradition from Moshe m'sinai. The Rambam gives a pretty nice list in this edition of the Akdama of the Rambam to Perish HaMashayis on the end of page Lama Tes, the beginning of page Mem. He goes through, what are the classic examples of halach l'moshe m'sinai? Chatzilog shem l'todu revi'a shem l'nazir achad asu yom shebein nidal l'nida halach l'moshe m'sinai. Good, love, dofen, akuma, halach l'moshe m'sinai. Shirin, chatzitzin, mechitzin, halach l'moshe m'sinai. Arava, nisach hamayim, halach l'moshe m'sinai. Tefillin, being written on klaf, mezuzah al duchsastus, sifrei Torah and gevil, halach l'moshe m'sinai. Where does it say that in the Torah? Nowhere. The fact that you need kesher tefillin, black ritzuos, tefillin merubaos, that they need to be a perfect square. Where does it say that? Nowhere. All of it is halach l'moshe m'sinai. That you should tie it with the hair and the paros begidon, halach l'moshe m'sinai. That you write sefer Torah b'diyom. All of these things, it just doesn't say it anywhere. It's not a Perish HaMekubal. This is Halach HaMoshe B'Sinai. That's the definition of Halach HaMoshe B'Sinai. Then the Rambam goes on and he says, I think we can divide, he says, all of Halacha into five types of Halachas, five categories. He says, I just told you the first two, but there are five overall categories of dinim d'oraisa, of dinei Torah. One category is Pirushim HaMekubalim, like we just said. One characteristic of this category is that there's never a machlokas in Pirushim HaMekubalim. You see on page memory, he goes through Achelik HaRishon, Achelik HaSheni, Achelik HaShishi, he's going through. So Pirushim HaMekubalim, there's no machlokas. Once somebody says Kibalti, discussion is over. Someone says Kibalti, I heard from a rep, done. Okay, Kibalti, you're Mekabel, okay, that's it. Then the second category is Halach l'moshe m'sinai, where there's no source in the Torah, and also says the Rambam, no machlokas. And again, that's a very controversial line of the Rambam. No machlokas by any Halach l'moshe m'sinai. So the Nitziv discusses this in the Nakdam and in the Kidmas HaEmek. We discussed this when we learned the Kidmas HaEmek. The Chavis Yoyer is a long tshuva where he goes through about 35 different places where we find machlokas in Halach l'moshe m'sinai. And the Nitziv has the famous Chiddush that there's a difference between Hilchos HaGemirila versus Halach l'moshe m'sinai. That when the Rambam says there's no machlokas in Halach l'moshe m'sinai, it's talking about what the Gemara actually calls Halach l'moshe m'sinai. A lot of times the Gemara will call something Hilchos HaGemirila. Hilsa Gemira, that means we have an ancient tradition where we can't trace it back to where we have it from. But it's not necessarily the Moshe Mitzrayim. It's just we think it might be because we can't trace it back to anything else. So Rashi and Tosafos always says Hilsa Gemira means Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. But Rambam's not so convinced. It means Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. So you have, it just means we don't know exactly where it came from. We can't, we don't remember. But you have, that's where you have Machlokas, says the Netziv. Okay, but that's the second category. Third category are dinim that are learned from Hekish and Yud Gimel Midah Shatarim Dreshban. That you can have machlokas on. They're being done. How to apply the Yud Gimel Midah Shatarim Dreshban? So one Tana says this way, another Tana says the other way, and that's why you have an expression sometimes in Shas where one person will say to the other, Im halacha nekabel vim ledin yesh tshuva. If you tell me that it's a halacha, what can I say? To be makabel, there's no room for machlokas. But im ladin, you want to tell me you're learning it from Yigam Shatar Dreshman? Yesh tshuva. Then I'm gonna argue with you. It's terrible to think, says the Rambam, a terrible mistake to think that machlokas came from a failed transmission of Perushim HaMukubalim, or from a failed transmission of Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Machlokas comes not from a failed transmission of anything. Machlokas comes from applying the Yud Gimel Midah Shatarim Dreshban to the cases that came up in each and every generation. We have new things that come up all the time. Then we have to learn from the Torah using Yud Gimel Midah Shatarim Dreshban. So different opinions about how to apply it. But it wasn't from a failed transmission of halachos. The way the halachos were taught, that was transmitted perfectly. Machlokas never crept in. He says people will tell you that it was all failure in transmission, and they'll bring a raya. They'll bring a raya from the fact that it says Misharabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel Shloshim Shukol Tzarchan Rabsa Machlokas BeYisrael. That because they were Talmidei Shammai VeHillel that weren't so attentive, that's how we had so much machlokas in Klal Yisrael. So that's the raya that must be from a failed transmission. He says no, it doesn't mean they weren't listening. It doesn't mean they weren't paying attention. It means that their seichel, their das, their ability to analyze wasn't as clear as that of the Rebbeim, of Shammai and Hillel. And therefore, they didn't see things the same way. When it came time to apply the Yud Gimel Midah Shatar Dreshban, they weren't seeing it the same way because they didn't have the clarity of vision and the clarity of mind that the Rebbeim had. Shammai and Hillel very, very rarely argued. The Talmidei Shammai and Hillel were the ones that argued a lot because, again, when it came to applying Yud Gimel Midah Shatar Dreshban, that's where they saw things in a different way. But it wasn't from a breakdown in our Mesorah Chas V'Shalom, says the Rambam. Then category four, says the Rambam, is takanos in the nature of geder and siyag l'Torah. Pasuk says, U'shmarti mishmarti, we have to protect the Torah. And what does that mean? Asu mishmeres l'mishmarti, that Chazal were trusted to make protective layers around the Torah. That to make dinim d'rabbanan, to protect the dinim d'araisa. This can clearly be subject to machlokas. Right, if you're keeping score at home, category 1, category 2, no machlokas. Category 3, yes machlokas. Category 4, definitely yes machlokas. Why? Because one chacham will say, I see a need for a gezerah. Another chacham will say, I don't see such a big need for a gezerah. Now, once it's accepted by Klal Yisrael, nobody, not even a Navi, is able to reject it. Once it's been accepted by Klal Yisrael, even Eliyahu HaNavi can't come and be Soser, one of the Yudchas Dover, that Beisham and Beisil were Masakein, the Gemara says, Avodzar Daf Lam Dvav, because Lefi Sheisur and Pashul B'Kol Yisrael. Once it's accepted in Klal Yisrael, so then it's accepted in Klal Yisrael. There's a lot to say on this. Do you guys have a few more minutes? Okay, so there's Rav Schechter, they just published last week a beautiful sefer from Rav Schechter on his shiurim of, he didn't write it, Rav Daniel Feldman wrote it up, but his shiurim on the transmission of Torah Sheval Peh, on the history of Torah Sheval Peh. So he discusses, he has a whole chapter where he discusses where the rabbinic authority came from to make dinim d'rabbanan. Right, if you want to discuss Gezeros and Takanos, these two parts of Torah Shabbat, let's first say the fifth part. The fifth part is not Gezeros, but it's Takanos and Minhagos, to help Jewish life. Right, Chazal Masakei Ner Chanukah, Mikra Megillah, and that's when we say Poritz Gedu Yishchedu Nachash, and you have that all over the place. Sholem V'Darshan was the first Takana. Sholem V'Darshan Hilchus Chag B'Chag. Who was the first rabbi to make Takana? Moshe Rabbeinu.
Right? It's not a din d'oraisa, the Shalom Darshan Hilchos Chag B'Chag. It's a Takana d'Rabbanan. But Moshe Rabbeinu was a rabbi too. It's a very early Takana d'Rabbanan. You have Takana of Hillel, of Prozbul. You have the Takanas of Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai. You have the Gemara that says, Bu'usha Hiskinu. Anytime we have these Lashon of Takanos, that's different than Gezeros. Gezeros and Takanos are somewhat different from each other. Now I'm going to go a little bit off from the Rambam, but to explore exactly the topic of Gezeros and Takanos, these two parts of Torah Shebal Peh that are Midrabbanan. Remember, we have this one part of Torah Shebal Peh that's D'oraisa, and that is Yud Gimel Mishnah Torah and Drashas Ben. Then we have parts 4 and 5, or both Rabbanan, but they're part of Torah Shebal Peh. So the two terms Gezeros and Takanos have a parallel in Dinim D'oraisa, Mitzvos Haseh and Mitzvos Lo Saseh. Right? What a mitzvah lo saseh is for a din d'oraisa, a gezeira is in din d'rabbanan. What a mitzvah saseh is in dinim d'oraisa, a takana is in dinim d'rabbanan. Right? Makes sense? Ner Chanukah. Does that sound more like a mitzvah saseh or a mitzvah lo saseh? That's a mitzvah saseh. So that's a takana d'rabbanan. Not to clap and dance on Shabbos. Shema Yisak and Klishir. Does that sound more like a lo saseh or a naseh? Sounds a lot more like a lo saseh. That's a gzeira d'rabbanan. Right? That's an exact parallel. The Gemara in Masechet Yevamos, Daf Chaf Aleph, discusses the source of the ability for Rabbanan to make gzeiros. And the Gemara discusses the concept of shnios la'arayos, the fact that a person is not allowed to sleep with their grandmother, for instance. So other arayos that are not mentioned in the Torah. So that was who made that issur of shnios la'arayos. That comes from Shlomo Melech. The Gemara says the reason he had the right to do this comes from the pasuk. Pasuk says mishmarti mishmarti. Right. So the Rambam took this straight from the Gemara in Yevamos. Mishmarti asum mishmeres l'mishmarti. So the idea that we were able to make gezeiros, and it's not going to be a violation of nisa, able to make gezeiros to stop us, to prevent us from violating the din d'oraisa, that's mishmeres l'mishmarti. Similarly, the Gemara learns from the pasuk in Bereishis, Ekev asher shama Avram lekoli vayishmer mishmarti mitzvosai chukosai v'torosai, that Avram Avinu also did this. That Avram Avinu also made siyagim l'torah. That he made safeguards for the Torah. So the Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal writes that the pasuk mishmarti mishmarti is actually addressed to each and every individual person, depending on your own challenges in life. You have to know where your pitfalls are. That if you know that by violating certain, by doing something, you're likely to violate a certain halacha, then you have a responsibility to make your own mishmeres mishmarti. So if that's the case, where did the Chachamim, that's what the Pashtun Pasuk says, Ramchal. So where did Chazal get the idea, where did the Gemara get the idea that it refers to a Beis Din, that a Beis Din is going to make a gzeira on all of Klal Yisrael, based on mishmarti mishmarti? So the Mesilas Yesharim understands that the Beis Din is able to act as shluchim for all of Klal Yisrael. That any gzeira that's mentioned in the Gemara are those gzeiros that apply to all Jews under all circumstances. That Beis Din, as representatives of Klal Yisrael, say, we think that Klal Yisrael as a unit will struggle to keep this din unless we make this gzeira. But that explains what motivated the Beis Din. What authorizes the Beis Din to do that? Who told the Beis Din that they get to act as shluchim for all of Klal Yisrael to decide what Klal Yisrael's challenges are? So Shachter points out that Rav Elchanan discusses this in Divrei Sofrim. He has a collection of essays called Divrei Sofrim that's published in Kovetz Shirim, the standard editions of two volumes of Kovetz Shirim. The Ramban, in his commentary to the Sefer HaMitzvos, raises the following kasha. Pasuk says when a person has a question of how to follow the dinim of the Torah, ki yipali mimcha davar l'mishpat, he should go ask the Beis Din HaGadol what the halach is, and whether they paskin that whatever they paskin he has to do, so that's what he has to do. So then the Torah says, lo sasur mikol ha-davar she'agidulcha yamin u'smol, that if they tell you something, you're not allowed to go the other way. So why does it say yamin u'smol? That's to teach us. Rashi tells us on Chumash, that's from the Sifrei, that afilu amru l'chal yamin shu u'smol, v'al smol shu yamin. Even if the Beis Din tells you something, they tell you that your right hand is your left hand, and your left hand is your right hand, like in the Eitan Kestenbaum video from the driving video, right? They tell you that your right hand is your left hand, your left hand is your right hand. Even if the rabbis tell you that you still have to listen to them. You always have to listen to the Rabban. So the Ramban quotes the Sifrei that Rashi quotes, and he says that doesn't seem to be true. First Mishnah Maseches Horias discusses the situation Beza Gadol made a mistake. And the Mishnah says that if the Talmud followed their opinion, believing that they were correct, the Beza has to bring a korban as a kapara for their mistake, and the people who followed their mistake don't have to bring a korban. But let's say the Talmud knew that they were incorrect, that they were wrong, and he still followed their opinion because Afil Al Yamin Shu is small. Whatever they say goes. So he still followed their opinion. So in that case, he's chayv. The Talmud's chayv for his own behavior. He did what he knew was wrong. So that's the Ramban. It's an obvious theory. On the one hand, the Mishnah says someone is not allowed to listen to others. He has to do what he knows honest to goodness is really right. And the other end, the Sifri says Al Yamin Shu small, Al small Shu Yamin. So what's going on? So Rav David Tzvi Hafman writes in the Tshuvas Malam of the Hoel, in the end of the third volume of Malam of the Hoel, he has a number of essays on topics of Torah Shebal Peh, etc. And he discusses this kash of the Ramban. So he quotes a lot of sources, and he answers, and he gives, he quotes a lot that's been written on the topic, and he comes out with nothing clear, that there's a lot of answers that are all in disagreement with each other. Meaning, essentially, he says it's machlokas and chazal, whether it's afilo yamin shu small, or whether you have to listen to, or whether you have to listen to yourself, not to the Beis Nagadol. Rav Elchanan writes in Kuntres de Risofrin that the Sifri is not talking about a situation that the Chum are making a mistake. The context is a situation where they're not making a mistake. They tell people to do different than what it says in the Torah, but not by mistake. They're doing this as mishmeres l'mishmarti. They're doing this as a way of making a geder. The Chum have the authority to tell us not to blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos. They know that the Torah says we're supposed to blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos. They're not making a mistake. They know what it says in the Pasuk. But the Sifri is teaching us that afilu al yamin shu small v'al small shu yamin gives them the authority, lo sasnu chayimin u'small, gives them the authority to do things that are clearly against the Torah, that are more than the Torah demands of us, that are gedarim and siyagim l'Torah. That's where they get the authority. It's that possible. It's not when they're wrong. It's when they know that what they're saying is against the Torah, but they're authorized to do that. So, and using that example, Rav Shechter points out, of not blowing shofar on Shabbos, that's very instructive to the connection between Torah Shabbosav and Torah Shabbal Peh. The Gemara has a stira between two psukim that describe Rosh Hashanah. One pasuk it says that Rosh Hashanah is Yom Truah, a day that we blow shofar, and the other pasuk calls it a Zichron Truah. Sounds like it's not a day we actually blow shofar, it's a day we talk about shofar. So the Gemara says, well, which is correct? Is Rosh Hashanah a day that we blow shofar, or is Rosh Hashanah a day that we talk about shofar? So the Gemara says they're both correct. When Rosh Hashanah falls on a weekday, then it's a Yom Truah. When Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, it's a Zichron Truah. But the Gemara says, wait a second, that's what the pasuk means, Zichron Truah, when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos? The din that we don't blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, din d'rabbanan or din d'oraisa? That's a din d'rabbanan. Midoraisa, of course you blow shofar. So you're going to teach a pasuk to tell me a din d'rabbanan? So very, very difficult. So the Gemara concludes that it's unclear, and we're not really sure what the Gemara concludes. That maybe it really is a din d'rabbanan, but it was already instituted in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, so it made its way into the Torah. Not so clear. However, Rav Shechter suggests, we generally assume the Gezeira that Asur Shofar on Shabbos was way after the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. It happened during the times of the second Beis Hamikdash. Where does the authority come from for the Rabbanan to overrule the Dinim D'Oraisa, and come up with their own Dinim D'Rabbanan, like wearing tzitzis with shatnas despite the mitzvah, or the Yom Tov Sheni, which cancels the mitzvah of tefillin that day? So the authority of Akira's Dover Min HaTorah is normally only b'shev v'al taseh. Normally it can only do if they tell you not to do something, rather than b'kum v'aseh. And the Gemara, when it discusses this, raises the possibility that the authority should really go b'kum v'aseh. Why are the Rabbanan only limited to tell me to go something to violate the Torah b'shev v'al taseh? But that's the Gemara's conclusion, that they can only do b'shev v'al taseh or b'kum v'aseh in special cases, on Rosh Hashanah, Migdir Milsa. So the Bali Atosos claim that the difference in Kum Vaseh and Shei V'al Taseh is based on the Pasuk. The Gemara quotes a Pasuk that there's some ambiguity as to which Pasuk it is. Eila mitzvos asher tziva Hashem biyad Moshe. To understand Eila, that only these are mitzvos that are binding. those that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, from the pasuk, we learn out that ein navi rashei lechadish davar me'ata. No other navi after Moshe Rabbeinu is allowed to introduce any other mitzvos. Tosos, following this idea, focuses on the words lechadish davar. That what's a navi now allowed to do? To make a new chiddush. A new chiddush. What's a chiddush? Rav Shach always loves to say chiddush is davar asoser as a klal. If we have a rule that's already predetermined, a chiddush is something that goes against the rule. So no navi or beis din is authorized to go against anything that's a klal. What's a klal? What it says in the Torah. Remember, klal osel protesef. No one's allowed to go against what it says in the Torah. So if the beis din institutes a gzeirah d'rabbanan that results in a mitzvah going unfulfilled, the mitzvah d'oraisa, that's not considered a chiddush. But if the beis din institutes something that's an active violation of an aveira, that's a chiddush because it's so ser the klal. So Tosfos proved that this is the underlying assumption throughout the Gemara, throughout Shas, that we're able to, the Rabban were able to be okedav b'shevi al taseh, but not b'kum ba'aseh. When Hillel was masakin Puzbul to cancel all loans in Shemitah, so the Reform loved Hillel, that Rabbi Hillel, he was able to change all the dinim, he was able to get rid of dinim d'araisa. But the Gemara already, the Gemara in Gittin asked this kasha, how was Hillel able to be masakin Puzbul? So the Gemara says, one of the suggestions is that Puzbul is only possible when Shemitah's d'rabbanim. So he wasn't undoing dinim d'araisa. Hillel lived 100 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which was around the year 70. From that time on, the halachas of Shemitah were only midrabanan, because Shemitah depends on Yovel. Yovel depends on having Rov Yoshtel, having most of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So we didn't have that already anymore, and therefore Yovel wasn't knowing. So Shemitah's not knowing midrabanan, so it was only midrabanan. So there's no problem. Hillel was able to heimam veimam, and Hillel was able to be misakin Puzbul, the same rabbanan who were misakin to observe Shemitah, were able to say with Puzzle you could get rid of Shemitah. That's the Shita Sarama. But the other Shita is as follows. And maybe it's based on Hefker, based on Hefker. That it's well known that the Rabbanim made many Takanas to Rabbanim in the area of Dine Mamanis. How are they able to do that? Hefker, based on Hefker. They could tell you, your money doesn't belong to you, it belongs to you. And then that's what the Takana of Puzzle was really all about. That's how the Ravid understands. So again, the Rambam describes category 4. What's category 4? Geder Siyag LaTorah. Where does that idea come from? The Rambam quotes the pasuk Ushmartem Es Mishmarti, that we have the ability to do that. Mesilas Yesharim says Ushmartem Es Mishmarti is really an individual right, but when Beis Din does it, they're doing it on behalf of all of, really it's an individual obligation. When Beis Din does it, they're doing it on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. This is where Klal Yisrael is going to struggle, and Beis Din is allowed to do this on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. Where do we find that Beis Din does this? Well, no better example than Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. But you see that it's so connected to the Torah Shebichsav that the Gemara even touches up a pasuk to refer to such a din d'rabbanan. Maybe that's the source of where we know that the Rabbanan are allowed to do it. That the Rabbanan took the cue from the pasuk to be able to do it. And then we have this category number 5, which is takanos, minhagos of Chazal. Not the zeros to protect us, dim d'rabbanan, but the more the mitzvah saseh kind of takanos. And that comes up in all sorts of dim d'rabbanan. We pointed out Megillah, Ner Chanukah, Eruv Tafshilin, all these different types of takanos. So, okay, so that's the question is where do those, how can you, the major question that you have to deal with in the Akronim on that issue is, where do they get the right to do that, to make takanos? Meaning, why isn't that baltosif? If you're adding a new din to Rabbanan, right, you're adding a new din to the Dine Torah, why isn't that baltosif? So Pashas says, as long as they tell us that it's a din to Rabbanan, and the Rambam himself seems to say that as long as they tell us it's a din d'rabbanan and they indicate that it's not a din d'oraisa, then it's not baltosif. If they were to tell us that a taka is a din d'oraisa, then it would be a violation of baltosif. We got to finish up because I got to leave soon. So the Rambam finishes up this section by just saying the following: why do we bother mentioning the machlokas? Why didn't Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, when he put together these mishnayos, why did he bother mentioning the machlokas when it was already decided? We followed the Rabbim anyway. So he makes 3 points. First of all, Mishnah says Beferish Nedios, that if some rabbi were to come along and say, hey, I thought of an idea, why don't we say this way? And we know that was the Das Yachid of the Beis Shammai against the Beis Hillel, we can say, you didn't reinvent the wheel, don't worry about it, it's been thought of already and rejected.
So forget about it. So we need a record of the ideas that were thought of, so make for easier transmission of the Torah when people want to come up with new ideas. First and second, he says, sometimes the Yachid is correct. Sometimes Yachid Rabbi Lach Karabim is usually the rule. Every once in a while, the Yachid is so compelling that his sheet is correct. Sometimes that's the reason to mention the Yachid. And also, he says, another reason is, and this also the Mishnah says explicitly in Adios, is that sometimes the Yachid backed out of his position, or the Rabbi backed out of their position and admitted to the other person. The Mishnah in Adios has a whole list of cases where the Beis Hillel were Chazru Midivreim Lahoros Kedivri Beis Shammai. They changed their mind and they followed Beis Shammai. And what that teaches us is that no matter who you are, don't be such an action. Don't be so stubborn to think that you always have to be correct. That sometimes you have to keep an open mind and you listen to what other people say. Even the Gedolei HaChachamim, the greatest Chachamim sometimes, understood when they were correct, and what they were interested in was not in being correct, they were interested in the MS. And when they saw that what they said wasn't MS, they were immediately choser on what they said. Okay, we'll stop there.